Lineouts. Racks.
Halls engage.
What an amazing try.
Tries and tackles. Dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class.
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Delcombe.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
Ben, you've been bursting at the seams, waiting for URC to return. This is the weekend where it's going to happen. You can rest assured. Quite a lot to look forward to. You know, this is the start of four matches leading into the quarterfinals of the URC, and there's obviously a lot to play for. I think for the Lions, it's getting into the top eight for the Stormers to consolidate and sort of aim as high as they can. And then for the Bulls and for the Sharks, there's the potential of getting yourselves into the top two potentially, although that might be very difficult for the Sharks. But that's a bumper weekend.
Yeah, I must admit, I think just to handle the last week's game, the Bulls against Edinburgh, I think the most frustrating part about that game for any Bulls fan would be the fact that if they were just 10% better than that first half, they probably could have won that game. Nothing Edinburgh really did was exceptional. Especially
they were efficient, but yeah, not over the top. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when you put it in contrast with what Leinster did the night before to Glasgow, you just sort of realize the different class in the games and you watch that as your next game. And I think the Bulls would be very frustrated with that because, they let one slip there and they could have won that game. I had this line in my match report there, which I'd love to repeat here because I kind of enjoyed it.
Go on then.
I said, there's purgatory, there's hell, and then there are games refed by French referees. I wasn't a big fan, but it wasn't the reason the Bulls lost. They lost because of their first half, which they were absolutely terrible.
We have criticized them as well if they've played for the bulk of the season. We have criticized them for not putting together sort of a full 80 consistently.
Yeah.
Even when they've won well, you know, they've had patches and matches where, there's a switch off.
Before you get in, we get into the South African teams. It's just interesting, before we started recording this, Pete Wilkins Connacht stepped down as coach. And when you think that they're in the run-in for the top eight, they've got just as important 4 weeks ahead of them if they want to make the top eight. And they've got a very good chance of making the top eight if they win their games. Just a very strange decision. And it was just a bit of breaking news this morning. Other than the news that Leinster signed another All Black, Enrico Ioane.
Very interesting, that one.
Yeah. And especially given the plot twist in that one, after Johnny Sexton's book where he said about the All Blacks having a no dickheads policy and Rieko's comments to him. And now he's going to be, the same Leinster fans who are upset about that are now going to be cheering him on next
year. Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting dynamic. Maybe the club called Sexton just to check if it's okay. Certainly very interesting move.
It's an exceptional signing, and it just shows you Leinster's sort of ambition as well. And I know I've spoken to people from the other sort of three Irish provinces, and there's this general belief that everything gets done to favour Leinster in Ireland, and it's hard not to see that their point of view when you see signings like this as well, partly funded by the Irish Rugby Union. So it's an interesting one, that one. But back to our teams, some big games this weekend. The Sharks have got Eben back. They've got Lucanio back. They've got a couple of their box. Apalele Fassi is back.
Apalele Fassi back. We're looking forward to that in particular because, I mean, before he got injured against the Stormers, he was having the season of his life just about. Yeah. I mean, he was springing his step. Almost everything he touched turned to gold. And it'll be interesting to see whether he can sort of take off where he left off.
Yeah, and I mean, he's got a whole online following where they call themselves the Church of Fosse, which is a rather interesting group of fans that he has. They're going to be obviously extremely happy that he's back. But I think for the Sharks, just having those players back to boost them at this time of the season, it's an important tour for them. They need as many points as they do, as do the Bulls on their tour. In fact, everybody needs points at the moment, so that's just I don't need to say that. But it's going to be a big, big match for them. How do you see it going?
It's often a tricky one where if you, and it just not just with the Sharks, but most teams who have international players coming back. I mean, we see it with the teams in the Northern Hemisphere when after the Six Nations, are they reintegrate their test players into their respective URC or franchises, for instance. So you don't necessarily expect the Sharks suddenly to, you know, shoot for the stars, but you expect there to be an improvement. You know, with a guy like Eben, we don't know whether all these guys are going to actually play on Saturday in the touring squad. So some of them might play, but not all. That there'll be greater fight. There'll be more mongrel up front. And maybe some of the other Springboks respond more positively with him there. At the back, you can almost put your money down already that they, you know, if Lukanyo, Apalele Fassi and Grant Williams, if they play, it certainly will give the Sharks more thrust. So I think there's a lot to look forward there.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, with Edinburgh having beaten the Lions and Bulls in consecutive weeks. I mean, Sean Everett had a quip in the Scottish press saying it's the Biltong series that they sort of saying locally, which is, it was quite funny. But you think to yourself, there can't be three South African teams in three consecutive weeks. Edinburgh aren't that good. And I know disrespect to Sean, but they shouldn't be.
Say that to yourself. Yeah, it's an easy one to say. But you know the realities. I mean, the Sharks have, I think it's a 3-1 record against Edinburgh. So they will feel vaguely confident. I think they've won the last two that they can pull off a win. But, you know, as the Bulls showed last week, and they showed us both sides of the coin. You know, if you sort of, Edinburgh will take advantage. And if you're not on your game, obviously they will take advantage. But then, you know, you apply yourself properly. You play the percentages. You know, then you can make inroads. And that's certainly what they did in the second half. And I think the Sharks might have learned a few things from the Bulls game also.
Yeah, I think they probably would have. To me, I'd go for Sharks when I just think at this time of the season, this is where they need to kick on. I think they will have learned a lot with that. Those stars, if they all play and fire, I'd give it to the Sharks. Not by much, but by at least the score.
Can we move on to the next one?
Yes, yeah. Bulls are going to Munster. Munster was still with the interim coach. Apparently, what I've read in the Irish press, extremely disappointed that they were beaten so soundly by Bordeaux. And they've lost a couple of players, I think three or four players to injury as well. But they promised a backlash. So I think the Bulls can... Munster's got some problems in the front rows. If the Bulls actually get some reward for their scrum this week, not like last week...
A French Riri this time, we don't know.
No, obviously not.
Yeah, I'm just being facetious.
But yeah, the Bulls scrum should be able to take advantage there. And I think that was part of the Bulls' problem last week. It's just, you know, they're such a set-piece team that when they don't get that reward, that almost...
Yeah,
so the stops there. So I'd see them getting that, but winning at Thurman Park is difficult at the best of times. So it's going to be a tough one for them. But I think they can win this one.
They can. I think if the Munster fans were upset about the team's performance last week, I mean, then you kind of also have to ask yourself, the week before, to pull off that win against La Rochelle took just about a superhuman effort. And La Rochelle also, to be fair, played a hand in their own demise in that game. And look, Munster played very well, and they probably at the end deserved to win that game. But to put two performances together back to back like that is a monumental ask. So I don't think they should be too downcast about it. The talk of backlash, I think Munster will probably be better this week, and there's no doubt about it. And the Bulls, if they play the same way they did last week, then I don't see them winning, because it will mean 40 minutes of decent rugby and 40 where they clearly off the pace. So I'm going to go Munster purely because of the fact that they are at home. And I think they are less prone to those lapses in matches. So a bit of an arm wrestle, but I think Munster, especially if the Bulls don't get rewarded in the scrum.
Yeah, I'm going to go for Bulls win just precisely because I think they can't play that badly for 40 minutes 2 weeks in a row. They probably will prove me wrong by me saying this, but yeah, I'm confident.
He's 11 minutes.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a big Bulls performance. Yeah, I think they need it. And with a bunch of their players coming back as well to the starting lineup, I'm hoping they're going to be able to put up that performance. But yeah, let's see how it goes. It's going to be a very difficult evening either way.
That'll make for compelling viewing, there's no doubt, one way or the other.
Yeah. The Stormers, of course, they've Connacht, who've just lost their coach, which is a very strange thing to do. And they don't have Bundy Aki. And I'm trying to think who the other players. There's a second player as well.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but since Andy Friend left, I mean, things have been a bit topsy-turvy.
Well, they certainly, I would favour the Stormers at home against any team anyway, especially with the players that they've got with Sasha and Damon Willems and those guys back. I can't see Connacht winning this one. I think we can probably get a very solid Stormers victory this week.
Also, I mean, they should be well rested. I think the coaches would have sort of got fresh perspective about their squad and about the way they play. I think John Dobson went to Toulouse for a week or so, spent some time there. They have a few things to rectify. I mean, at least they know they've identified the areas where they need to improve. They don't finish the way they used to. They make wonderful entries into the 22, play themselves into positions of promise, but they don't deliver ultimately. They don't score the points. And then conversely, they hand the opposition easy entries into the 22, not so much by poor defense and the opposition playing their way into their 22. The Stormers concede silly penalties, and then the ball gets kicked into the corner and suddenly they're under pressure. So they've conceded a lot of points that way. So game management there obviously is a thing. They have a few players back as well from injury. We saw that already in their last away game. But they, in the coming weeks, will welcome back a few more players. So they actually in a half decent position to finish the league phases of the URC with a bit of a spring in their step.
And I think for Stormers fans, probably their hope is that a confident Stormers team that builds up a bit of momentum in these next couple of weeks, hopefully, would be a nightmare for somebody else to face, especially if it's the Sharks or the Bulls who finish third or fourth and it's a Stormers finish sixth or seventh. That could be a very, very tough quarterfinal in that stage.
Very split league, yeah.
Anyway, so that's them. And then, of course, we come to the Hail Mary side, the Lions, who are going to have to be something they haven't been the entire season, and that's consistent if they're going to make the top eight.
Well, yeah, consistent. They need to be accurate all the time. Precise. They're playing a team with a similar attacking ambition. I mean, obviously the Lions have to go for bonus points. Bonus point wins in the remaining games to have a say, potential say in the top eight against a very feisty Benetton team who, you know, they also seek to, run with the ball more than they kick it. So, I think it'll be a high tempo game at Ellis Park. I think it'll be high scoring. I think there'll be lots of errors. It'll be helter skelter, and it's a difficult one to call. But it's one where if the Lions aren't careful, they could lose by 15 points. Conversely, they could win by 20. I mean, it's a tricky one to predict.
The only thing I think in the Lions' favor is that Benetton only left on Tuesday for South Africa. And so the altitude may be a factor late in that game as well, especially if it's a high tempo game. But the squad that Benetton has brought over is basically the Italian squad. There's I think 14 internationals, and that's not even counting the likes of Malachi Fekitoa. There's two South Africans there, Eli Snaiman and Reno Smith, who both play pretty well for Benetton when they play for them. So certainly a very good team, and the Lions are going to struggle. I think with the desperation,
and it's an early afternoon kickoff as well. So if it's warm, at the moment what we've experienced in Joburg, we haven't had really warm days. But you never know.
Yeah, I think I'd probably still say the desperation of the Lions probably will take it there. But it's going to be a very close game, and I wouldn't even be surprised if Benetton won just because of the quality of their squad as well.
Yeah, and I think some of those players have been involved in some tight scraps and. They didn't necessarily fall on the right side of the result. I'm thinking of their most recent game, away to Cast, I think, where they fell just short. It was a hell of a watch that game because it went one way and then the other. But I think they would have taken quite a lot out of that game. So if they're involved in a similar type of game, I think they've got the personnel to pull it through.
So let's go quick fire just for the rest of the fixtures before we get to our main interview today. It's Judgment Day in Wales, which means there's a double hitter at the Principality Stadium. Ospreys against Cardiff and Dragons against Scarlets. Ospreys 12th, Cardiff 9th. Although with the problems in Welsh rugby and Cardiff going into administration this week, there's going to be a lot of emotion around that game. I could see Ospreys winning this one.
Same here. You're right. There will be a lot of emotion. The Principality Stadium, most of the time, is one of those venues that draws tears very quickly. So, I'll have to go Ospreys as well.
And Dragons Scarlets, the other game of Judgment Day, the doubleheader at the Principality.
Scarlets
must be Dragons are 16. They haven't really done much. They're the bottom team in the competition. Can't see them winning another game. So, yeah, Scarlets all the way. Interesting one at the Stadio Sergio Lanfranchi in Parma. Zebra hosting Glasgow Warriors. On log position, Zebra 15th, Glasgow 2nd. It's not a contest, but Zebra have been more than feisty this season.
Mm. And the question here is, do they know more about the opposition's coach, or does the opposition's coach know more about them? Another interesting dynamic there. You would still think an awkward game, but I think the Warriors should still win that game and win it by like double digits.
I think there's one thing here is just how many scars are left from that Leinster defeat, 52-0. That's a massive defeat for Glasgow, and they wouldn't have expected that. That'll hurt them. You could see a very big backlash, or you could, I could actually see them winning by 40 just because of that backlash. But Zebra, it's going to be an interesting one to watch that one.
And of course, the Warriors also have lots of incentive. I mean, they want to hold on to that second spot. You don't want to slip down to the point where, you potentially end fourth and then you have to play Leinster again in a semi-final if both teams get there. So lots of potential, not potential, but motivation for them to stay second at least.
And then the last game, big Irish derby, Leinster-Ulster. Leinster first on the log, Ulster sixth. I don't think there's even a question. Leinster haven't conceded a point in the last two games that they've played. They are looking.
Awesome. You know, we're not too long ago, but anyway, go on.
Now, there is a guy there that knows a bit about defense, apparently. It's a derby, so it should be a bit tighter. And I'm sure Ulster won't be scared off by that. But you can't see anything less than a 15-20 point victory for Leinster.
Yeah, look, it'll be rough and tough, and it'll be a typical derby. But ultimately, when it comes down to the quality and to the accuracy and precision, that will reside on one side of the field, and it's the blue side. So it'll be Leinster.
I must admit, I'm not one to ever go early with a prediction that a team's going to win the championship. But what we've seen from Leinster in the Champions Cup in the last 2 weeks, it's going to take some effort from stopping them from both claiming both trophies. In the Champions Cup, there is a lot more quality that can stop them. But in the URC, you're going to have a very big upset to beat them this year.
Yeah, they're going to be done a big favor in the other half of the draw because one of Bordeaux or Toulouse will get knocked out. Toulouse have a tricky one away again against Bordeaux. So, that's going to be even if they get through it, that will take a lot out of them. And you have to say Toulouse is probably the only team that will stop the Leinster juggernaut in the Champions Cup.
Yeah, I mean, Bordeaux's got probably the best backline in the competition at the moment, but they not as badly as the Bulls, but they tend to go to sleep at times. They tend not to keep up that intensity. Toulouse obviously aren't the same without their talisman, the best player in the world.
You mention his name, you can say it.
Anton Dutant. But they still are a lot of quality. And the way they ground out that game against Toulon, where I thought, geez, Toulon did everything right in a way. I mean, you don't see Thomas Ramos miss that many kicks in a game and still win a game. So that's something. It was just an enthralling game to watch. Absorbing really shows what's good about the Champions Cup.
Having spent a few weeks in Toulon during the World Cup, to be part of that atmosphere would have been absolutely incredible. But it looked a good vibe.
We're gonna go move on to our interview, but one last thing I just wanted to say, even South Africa's performances in the European competitions or the EPCR competitions this season have been very disappointing. I'd say bordering on embarrassing that we haven't been in the knockout stages of the Champions Cup. And I think there has to be a big rethink because if we're not going to take the competitions as seriously as Toulouse, we'll never have the budget of this, but there's certainly so many ways we can become more professional as franchises and at least compete. Yeah, nobody expects us to win it just yet, but I think you have to be in the playoff rounds.
Look, I take your point, valid point. What we, and this is probably a topic of conversation for another podcast where we can devote a bit more time to it, but things will get better. And the reason I say that, and why I say it with so much conviction, South Africa will become full members of the URC and then indirectly through that, the EPCR. So in terms of funding, more money will come into, well, there'll be shareholders, 25% shareholders in the URC. So they'll have access to more funds. Their bill, I'm thinking now, just travel, for instance, that will come down significantly because now they don't have to just foot their own travel bill and partly foot the bill for other teams. Suddenly a lot more cash will be available in the local rugby ecosystem. Obviously, how that gets divvied up will be a bone of contention, but there will be more funds available. So whether it's retaining players or maybe even luring a few players back from overseas, we should be in a better space from next season onwards. I'm not suggesting for a moment that the South African team will win the Champions Cup, but things will improve.
Yeah. Well, and we'll be able to host home playoff games from next season as well, which hasn't been the system to now. So that should also make a difference. Coming to a full Loftus or Kings Park, or sorry, Hollywood Bets Kings Park, would be a very, very good prospect for the home team. Tough one for opposition teams, although teams like Toulouse have showed they can win in South Africa already. So, but let's get to our guest. Then we might as well be wasting a lot of time here to do that.
This is a good view.
Yeah, we've got a very, very exciting guest, and I intro him properly there. But just say it's not a rugby interview. It is a rugby interview, but it's not a rugby personality.
No, it is a rugby interview, but it's somebody who is involved in the game, but not with not in the conventional way where it's trucks and mauls and scrums. And line breaks. It's somebody who's involved in creating content around the game and using the characters and telling stories and taking what we know and giving a bit of a twist. Somebody who can locate your funny bone very easily. But I'll leave the rest of it to you.
Our interview today is a bit left field for us on the rugby podcast. It's somebody you probably know pretty well from other parts of the entertainment industry. He's a singer. I'm trying to think of everything I can describe him as: a singer, a podcaster, an actor, and a comedian. And I'm trying to think what else. Boa Bosch, welcome to The Last Drop. What else can I describe you as?
Thank you. I appreciate it. Model, if the budget's there, I can model as well. But yeah, that's where the money comes in. Let's be honest. If you look at me, it's not a moneymaker. My face is not a moneymaker.
Strangely
enough, Brendan said left field and he didn't go the other side because the misinterpretation happens very easily.
It's lucky to be here. Thanks for having me.
Bo was telling us off air how you just went for his latest haircut. So, I must say, you're looking rather handsome there. Men don't say that enough to each other. So let's start on there.
I agree. Thank you for that. I'll take it.
Liam's a bit worried now.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
I want to ask Liam for his barber's number, but he didn't ever get back to me on that. But Bo, we're gonna talk a bit. We obviously a rugby podcast, and know you from other parts of that, but the people probably don't realize you've been quite involved with the Springbok Rugby Stars in terms of the advertising industry and some of the adverts you've made. Maybe just give us a bit of background how you got involved. I mean, you're obviously a rugby fan. I know that from our past chats. So, and how did you get involved there?
Yeah, so I was actually part of the 1995 SARU setup where Joel kicked that goal. I was one of the ball boys there behind. You don't see me. I was the guy. When they took that epic photo, I was right behind the goalpost. So no one remembers me from that. But I've been in SARU's circles since I was 7 years old. But lately my life changed a lot. Me and my friend Benny Foodie started an ad agency, and we started working with the Springboks through Switch Energy Drink, that was a previous sponsor before the latest announcement were made. So we had the privilege of working with a few Springboks there, later on with Pick n Pay as well, and it's incredible. I mean, these guys, our social media has changed the sphere and the status of rugby players in South Africa and the world is insane how it just changed from the Springboks 15 years ago. It's crazy just what a TikTok and Instagram and social media has done to these guys. They're like superstars. So it's awesome for us to make comedy with them, because we love comedy. That's something we like. But to have them, I mean, I feel sometimes so bad for the players, because the last thing they want to do is being a silly commercial. They grew up as boys just wanting to play rugby, kick a winning goal, and now they have to stand with a product in hand and do something silly. So a lot of the times I feel for these guys. I'm like, oh, I know you don't want to be here. I'm so sorry. But just trust us. It's going to be fine. But yeah, so far we had a good run with regards to successful campaigns. And what we've learned is the players that don't take themselves so serious are the ones that that own it. The ads come out more fun, because we know they're serious. That's what they do. They play rugby. They're serious guys. It's always war. But the ones that's able to laugh at themselves a little bit are the ones that the ads come out the best.
Before you identify who those players are, you talk about how things have changed over the last 15 years, but even the last 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Because there is a big feel-good factor about the Springboks, and a lot of that has to do with the number of trophies that reside in the SA Rugby cabinet. It must be an absolute pleasure to be involved in that sphere. A lot of people will think it's easier now, but you obviously, for what you're doing, you need to stay ahead of the curve, because it's like, you know, there are any number of funny people out there, but you need to be top of your game.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, we use a Rasi approach, meaning we surround ourselves with people that's better than us the whole time. And I think that's a key ingredient with regards to any industry, no matter if it's just entertainment or sports. If you have people around you that's better than you, you can learn from each other. It's free education. But also everything gets better. The one concept you put on the table just gets excelled and excelled because someone else has another point of view. But we pride ourselves in our brainstorms and when we come up with these concepts. And it's also a back and forth with the players to be like, listen, are you keen if we make this joke? When we shot with Steven Kitsoff, we made a ginger joke. And you obviously have to flag this with the guys to be like, are you okay saying this? But we've also tried to push the boundaries. We did a scene thing once with John de Villiers where we interviewed a few Springboks. And the number one question, it was like a talk show, very between two ferns, tongue-in-cheek, nothing is serious. But the first question, I think, to Eben was like, listen, how much do you make a month? And I mean, that's obviously a ridiculous question to ask anyone, no matter what your workplace is. But Saru was just like, no, you can't ask that. And we're like, we're not going to use it in the edit. It's just to get the guard down, to make Eben feel like, but anyway, so there's sometimes they sort of do rail you in and be like, listen, that's off topic. Let's not do that. And we also respect that. We don't want to do things just for controversial sake or put people in places that they don't have to. Key with comedy is always punching up and never to punch down. And that's always important for us. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you'd mentioned John de Villiers' name, because when you have to be careful when you, I mean, he's a funny guy in his own right, but you have to be careful when you ask him about injuries. Because he basically treats those answers as a need to know basis.
That's amazing. No, he's randomly yesterday, like I'm in London now. He was literally in the street yesterday. I saw him through the window and I was like, well, I just walked up to him and they made small talk, because I'm such a big fan of him. But I mean, we spoke quickly about like the opportunities after rugby these days. Like a few years ago, it was like, if you don't go into coaching or you land a job at like a prestige school as a coach or wherever. Yeah, exactly. On Supersport. But besides Supersport, I mean, there's like people that do way better than that, just have rugby podcasts that travel the world. And that excites us to know that I mean, the Rudy Page and
Jean de Jong.
Yeah, Juan de Jong. I mean, that podcast, the way they started, where they are now, And that's another testimony of when you don't take yourself that serious, because everyone can start all the overseas podcasts, rugby podcasts, feel a little super serious a lot of times. And then these guys just come and muck around and have fun. And then they rocked up at the T20, the cricket event the other day. And I think that's what rugby became more human for me. And I think maybe it has to do with also chasing the sunset, the fact that they pushed a lot of human narratives in between the whole team dynamic. But rugby in general, just everything in the world of rugby became a lot more touchable almost. Like every day, it's like a TV show. You tune in, there's like 5 to 10 different rugby TV shows that you can watch on your phone. That's all online.
I was going to say your partner there, Benny. Of course, people also know him as, I think, as Harry's his name on the SuperSport ads. He's the guy who does all the SuperSports and the Lacquerslop ads with all the kids. That one that is very funny. That what you guys did as well. Sometimes to me, I mean, I watch these Bock ads and I think to myself sometimes they look so awkward. Right. And as you say, they're all a bit awkward in it because they're not professional actors, but
yeah.
But the awkwardness almost works because people sort of forgive them for that. Is there any Springbok that's you've sort of worried that can come take over your job? And is it?
I was very impressed with Jasper Visser. I did a scene with Jasper Visser. He just totally committed. He just couldn't care less about. But it's also a generational thing. I think the older guys that didn't grow up really with like social media, it's weird for them to be silly in front of a phone. Where the younger guys like Damien Willemser, we did something with him as well. He just leaned in because that generation, they've got like phones where they were 14, TikTok and those things were around where they were super young. So they understand the clout of like being popular online. And also, they I think they've got a more healthy relationship with the guy on the field, who they are when they need to win, and also just the guy when there's no camera in a pub, having a beer with a friend. So I think maybe it's also like they've got a healthy relationship with both sides of them, that it don't have to be this just serious rugby player. But it's also, I think, personality-wise. But yeah, for me, Damien Willemser stood out. He was incredible. Trevor Nyakani was also great. But then Jasper Visser was just my favorite. I told Jasper, like, he's got an incredible voice. Maybe radio work is his future going forward.
Yeah, it's a good point you make there. I mean, Brendan and I know some ex-players, some ex-Springboks who think that TikTok has something to do with their appointment with their cardiologist. So we appreciate that.
But it's fascinating. I mean, it's definitely, it excites me. I mean, the fact that your favorite player, they're touchable now. I mean, you can say something and there's probably a chance he's going to read your comment and reply. So these guys have become superheroes, like Marvel superheroes in South Africa, but they're also way more reachable than ever before, I think. But I think obviously the real challenge is to figure out, what do you do with this after your career? Like, what do you do with your online fame? Can you put it into a marketing career or like Skalk and what's Skalk and
box office guys,
yeah, exactly. I mean, they've got like 3 podcasts going and they figured out how to do it and it's working for them.
Yeah, you touched on the point earlier where you have to decide. I mean, is something funny or not? Because often it's with cancel culture, it's so easy to fall on the wrong side of the line. So you have to kind of tread carefully. I mean, what are the questions that you ask yourself before you go into a particular direction? I mean, do you do self-censorship or do you do that with the people that you're doing it with? In other words, the people you collaborate with?
Yeah, great question. So we kind of very in touch with South Africa in terms of what you... It's not about what you can say. It's also, do you want to say it? There's a lot of things you can say, but is it for a cheap laugh? Is it punching down? Who's getting hurt? Because the thing with comedy is there's always a victim. Someone always slips on a banana peel, or someone is the dumb guy that don't get the joke. So unfortunately, comedy works well when there's a victim. So in general, society is always a victim. And you need to figure out, is it worth it to make this person or this culture group or whatever it is a victim. So first of all, we bounce off of each other to be like, is this too risky? Is this, are we too old now? Have we lost touch with what you can and can't do? And then also the client we do this for, they also know, okay, let's stay away with this because we're going to get in trouble. We shot something for a client once where there was a scene about the EFF being involved. Very funny, lighthearted. Nothing was about Julius Malema. It was just about the party in general and them losing members. And we shot the whole scene. It was in the edit. It was incredibly funny. And then just last minute, the CEO was like, listen, I don't want the EFF to come rock up here and make trouble. So let's just, for safety's sake, take it out. So sometimes the client also, obviously they have to have a say. They're the ones paying for this. But in general, I think we've got a good, our muscle is very strong. Because that's the only thing we flex. Like if you go to the gym, you pick up a dumbbell, your muscle will be super strong. We only pick up comedy the whole day. So our muscle has become really strong. And I say that with humility, but also with proud. We're not better than anyone else. We just got a, we got a niche thing going, and we're strong with a certain thing we're doing. And but there has been times where it failed in the past, where we shot things where it just like just didn't go well. And then you just take it on the chin and you try to figure out what was it that we missed, and then you learn from that and you go on. But we never want to be controversial just because it's going to get clicks or views, and that's never not worth it. We're in it for the long game, and we also say we want to laugh with each other rather than at each other. So it's never just the one silly guy that's a victim. We try to include more people than just one that we make fun of, if that makes sense.
I was going to say, I mean, a good example of that is the one you guys did with Sia and Eben and Drikus du Plessis, the Lekker Slop one where they snuck out the hotel. I'm sure people can go YouTube it or shoot somewhere online if they want to look at it again. But I mean, that's the type of thing where, I mean, I thought Sia, the what cracked me up in that one was right at the end. When the punchline is given and everything, and Sia went, hey, like that. So yeah, that to me,
It was natural improv. That wasn't scripted. He just in the moment. So that was super fun because when those three guys are together, it was like stout gat sinkies. Just like, because we had 6 hours with them in Durban, which is not a lot of time, to be honest. Like 6 hours is nothing in the world of advertisement. So it was a tough shoot to start off with. But the fact that they were just super friends already because of Drikus's fight in Australia, they were there walking out with him. So that helped the dynamic. But the power is always to be present in the moment. And Sia brought a lot of the improvisation on that day as well to make it fun. Because I mean, we are super intimidated because these guys they're rock stars to us. So it's also tough for us to be like, listen, can you do it a little bit more like this? And then acting is not their thing. So it's tough to give them notes and then like, listen, I'll try, but shame. But they were awesome. They brought the A game. But what I can say about those guys, especially that shoot, because we were in Durban and Umhlanga in the streets, like the people freaked out when it was just these guys in the street there, and they were so friendly. Like Sian, Eben, and Drikus, they greeted everyone on the crew with a handshake. It wasn't like, listen, whoever that guy is in the back, they greeted everyone, hello and goodbye at the end of the night. And it's small stuff like that that makes a massive difference in people's lives. Is if they just do a little handshake, look them in the eye, and say thank you for carrying the lights today, or making coffee, whatever silly thing it is that they did on set. But I got a lot of respect for them for that behavior on that day.
One thing,
you kind of have to pinch yourself. Sorry, but then you go.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was going to say one thing, but I mean, one thing you do pretty well. I mean, you do a lot of skits online. You do people who've on Instagram, and people have seen your stuff with Timber as well. And it's a lot of work, these skits. I mean, I know that all, but I've done it on my YouTube channel and stuff. People don't realize the amount of preparation that goes into anything. And I can just imagine in comedy, it's 10 times and you second guess yourself a lot. Part of what happens in rugby is you don't really see players doing much on Instagram. It's more sort of sponsor stuff, and I suppose that comes from the whole thing of Russie's let the main thing be the main thing, that there's almost this overemphasis, unsaid overemphasis, of you're a rugby player, so be a rugby player and make sure that you're serious. We haven't really seen anybody that's on the level of like the Honey Badger, Nick, what's his surname, from Australia, or somebody like that.
What's his name? The guy from England?
Yeah, Joe Marler. I'm just wondering if you've seen anybody that we've maybe missed, or do you think that's maybe something that hopefully will come through still?
Yeah, I wonder what the conversation is like once you're in the rugby circles, like when you're with the union, if there's social media training, or if it's like, listen, guys, stay away, meaning it's trouble, because if you make the wrong post, you're going to get... I mean, Yalton Yankees was... He was very flashy with his lifestyle. It wasn't necessarily comedy, but he wasn't shy posting about like fancy cars or where holiday was or whatever. So, but I don't know, to be honest, I don't know what the rules are with those guys. It makes sense thinking that they would maybe shy away from it because of the dangers of like just what you can get into by starting having conversations with people sliding into your DMs, getting yourself in trouble. I think that's one avenue of it. I think another thing that plays a part in my life, even though I do comedy, is insecurity. Like sometimes you don't want to do post things because you're just insecure. So maybe it's a thing of like, they want to post more stuff, but they just feel like, nah, it's silly. But I think it's a challenging world because you are a rugby player. That is your world. You do nothing else. There's not even, maybe some of the guys study, but that is your world. And I think people obviously follow them because I want to see your world. I want to see how you train. I want to see the routines. I mean, Courtney Skosin is a great example of like someone that is really dabbling in the media world. He's got a podcast now and he's interested in making more content. His wife does incredible content. But I think, yeah, I think it's just a, maybe it's also like a training thing that I don't necessarily know how to do it. Or is it interesting? Like I said earlier, I feel for these guys on set. They don't want to be there because they just want to play rugby and have fun with their friends on a field. And now I have to tell them, listen, hold the can like this and take a sip or whatever. But yeah, I think that's a good question. I think there's more dangers to social media, I think, for these guys than, because they are rock stars. Everyone wants a piece of them.
To what degree do you think what you're doing now and the success with which you're doing it is linked to success on the field? In other words, there's a feel-good factor about the Springboks. The brand is great. Other brands want to be associated with them. To what degree do you think that what you're doing is linked to that? Because at some point, obviously, the wheel turns ever so slightly and people's perceptions will change. When it comes to content, there'll still be content, accessibility and the way you push that out. I mean, have you sort of thought ahead of how you would need to sort of stay ahead and sort of stay relevant in that sense?
Yeah, that's a great question because, I mean, it helps if there's a high already coming in. So you already know we're the world champs, but now you're seeing your world champ in a commercial. Now it's extra special or fun. But the moment the wheel turns and hopefully touch wood, it wouldn't turn ever. It wouldn't turn. Then I think it's gonna become challenging. I'm trying to think of like that time where we lost like Heineken Meyer's era. I mean, if you think of like, also like Springboks in commercials is a new thing. It feels like 5 years old. I remember Bismarck being in a Pumpity Pump Pump ad like 8 years ago or something. But I mean, the guys Furide Priya, Victor, those guys, I can't remember them being ads way back. So it's almost like. But those guys didn't have the track record that these Springboks have. I think, obviously, with World Cup.
Franchot, you know, and a Lay's ad is about as far back as I can go.
That was like the first one. But then he was like an anomaly. There wasn't anything else built around any other player that had major success. But obviously social media played a part in that. Like brands can market on so many places now. Back in the day, it was only TV, which was expensive. So, but that's a good question. I think it helps a lot with if the team keeps winning, the Springboks are the best, and the best players come from South Africa. I think that helps brands a lot. It helps us. It's almost like halfway there. You just need to do something slightly okay to stand out in a sense. But we obviously try to push the boundaries as far as it goes, but it is easier to work with a brand like the Springboks that's a winning brand the whole time and that keeps on winning. And also, besides the winning on the field, the narrative around the Springboks, the fact that Rassie and them made the team a lot more human. I think Jason Asante plays a role in that, in making these guys a lot more human. Now you know the stories of like where Mapimpi's from and where Bongi Bonami's. I didn't know he came from Bethlehem and there was an Afrikaans Wimmy that took him to school because of all his circumstances. So I think people like relatability, and if you can touch someone. So the players has become a lot more touchable because it's my story now. I'm also the kid that grew up during terrible times where my parents couldn't afford school or whatever, and there was someone else that helped. So I think the PR around the Springboks changed a lot since Rassie came along, and that changed the game for everyone, I think. Personally, not just for brands, but people also bought more into Springboks because of, I feel like I'm that player now.
I'm almost at the end of my questions now. I'm sure Liam still has a few, but I was going to ask you if there is a wish list. Is there a player that you haven't worked with, or somebody you want to get up for an intermercial or commercial, or something, who would it be?
I'm a big fan of Andre Esterhazy just because of his mustache and his size. So I've always wanted to do something with him as a police officer, because anyone that looks like that feels like he needs to be some sort of authority figure with a badge and like a, you know, that gun holster. So he's just someone that I just like his looks, like something about the way he looks is the whole vibe. Jasper Wiese was one, but then we got to work with him. I think I would straight up want to do something with Rassie as well. But Rassie's great with being vulnerable. I tend more to gravitate towards people that's keen on being vulnerable and keen on being open and not so protected, like if I can say that. So I think someone like Rassie would be interesting to sit down and figure out what you can do with him. But I must commend him on the fact that he's super, especially on his podcast lately. He's very vulnerable and honest and open towards. To a certain extent, there's obviously secrets and stuff that they don't want to share, which it's fair. But I tend to gravitate more towards the more vulnerable side of society and people that's keen on acknowledging that this other side to you being a strong rugby player as well. There's a softer, more vulnerable side. That's what's questbar in English? Vulnerable, is that the word? Yeah,
vulnerable.
Oh, vulnerable. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. On your Andre Esterhazy wish list, I mean, something just arrived in my head as you said it, and this ad would never fly, but just picture it, the way you set it up, John Forster Square, chicken licking, and that particular pass.
Mm. Yeah, that's golden. That look, yeah. Anyone with a mustache. I feel like mustaches should be compulsory in a Springbok setup. I just feel I can't take someone serious. But someone like Don Eman, I like him a lot. There's a lot of mystery behind him. I would like to tap him.
I wish I could be his psyche.
Yeah, he's a massive.
How did you survive it?
No, I haven't. I've never met him. Is he crazy?
Nothing handshake.
And he's a serious guy. And the funniest thing is when you meet him, he seems like typically he's too serious the whole time. And then when you actually, obviously when he gets to know you a bit, he's got this dry sense of humor. Don is, but he's got these weird sayings. I mean, the one that everybody probably knows, because I've also written it a couple of times, is that he tells the players that they must pack their lunchbox. And I mean, the players, the first time he did it, he said, when you go to work, you pack your lunchbox. He says, and you've got a lacquer lunch. You're looking forward to your lunchbox. And then you eat lacquer. So that's how you do a scrum. You pack your lunchbox in the week. When you get to the scrum, you're ready to eat. And
incredible.
I mean, he's got these. The philosophy of Don Eman could be a podcast on its own, I think.
Yeah,
then
feels like there's a book waiting. Yeah, feels like there's a book waiting to happen. No, but I mean, I know nothing about coaching, but I think there's just something interesting. I don't know what the secret sauce is to the success at the moment. Maybe it's something I was wondering about, like the Springbok and the Saru setup. Is like, what's the policy and approach on like mental health for the players? Because obviously, like Jason and Son said, big focus on like the winning side of things and how the tactics and how incredible the skills are. But I'm trying to think about like the side that you don't see about these players, that they get elevated to this rock star status and then they carry the whole country on their shoulders in interviews and on the field. And then I was just wondering if you guys have any insight on that. If Saru has got like a psychology section that, I mean, because there's like 9 coaches that's on passing and tackling and defense or whatever, but how does the systems look like that take care of the guys emotionally? And because everyone's story is incredible, but I mean, you live your whole life with your story and your past and your rugby career, and everyone's career is a short part of that life. But after that, life goes on, and to figure out like, how do you deal with your background and just all the stuff you went through? But basically the mental health side of things and sort of, do you guys know if there's systems in place?
Well, there is Dr. Rassie Rasmus, but behind the scenes, there's also through my players, the outlets or the avenues that they can pursue. And then also at their provinces. But Brenda, you probably know more.
Look, I mean, my players, the players organization does have a mental health hotline. They do have programs for players who are dealing. So they know that they are professionals but I mean, like anything in life, those systems probably need the player to reach out on their own first. Yeah. I think a lot of the times where it fails players is because is after rugby. Because while they're there, most teams have a sports psychologist somewhere involved at some point in the system, and there are people they can talk to, and most of them have a support system, hopefully. A lot of them do. But when the game finishes, and a lot of players will tell you that's the worst, because suddenly you're not with your mates anymore. You're not having your four times a week practices, your weekends with your mates, and suddenly that you sort of left to your own and life goes on without you. So I know there's, I spoke to one ex-Springbok player, who's now is a recovering alcoholic. He's gone through some really tough stuff. People will know I wrote the story of the book on Derek Hougaard as well. He's been through some real bad times and he's hopefully on the road to recovery now. But yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. It's a case by case basis. And,
yeah. But you're right. You have to ask for help. Yeah.
Not enough is being done, but, we can always do more. And I think that's probably somewhere, not just rugby, other sports can, all sport can probably do a lot to get that. My last question for you, I'm going to go. We spoke a lot about your ad work and your comedy work, et cetera, but people, probably some of us remember that you were part of a couple of bands, including the one I enjoyed the most was Acophony OK. I think I said right. Have you not found any Springboks to come join the band?
You know what my big wish was is to sing the national anthem. And then I got asked to do it at a varsity cup game in Potchefstroom. But it wasn't a broadcast game. I was like, yeah, thank goodness, because it wasn't I didn't drop the ball, but it wasn't my best work yet. But so I still do music every now and then, but maybe who's that singer? Who's that the prop that sang well? It was Bali Swart. Was it Bali Swart?
Yeah.
Who sang the anthem once?
He's the one you're referring.
Maybe someone like, I should ask Faf. You see, you need to think of a music video. You can't just think of the song. You need to think of like a music video. Maybe people will like Faf in a music video. But the majority of times, I'm so insecure about asking all these guys any favors. So I just rock up and say, do my thing, walk away, and never hear from them again. But I must muster up the courage to get them more involved.
I think if you go Google, I think it was the Golf Boys or the there's a golf video with Ricky Fowler and a couple of the other players where they sort of, they basically parody themselves the whole time. I think isn't that maybe we must talk about doing something like that for the box. I think it would be quite
fun. Yeah.
So
exactly. Like I say, if you don't take yourself that serious, people love that.
Yeah.
I have no more questions. I just want to thank you for taking the time. You're a busy man. So thanks for agreeing to come onto the show.
Yeah.
Thanks for what you're doing, because some people locate other people's funny bone easily, and you obviously have that gift. So keep on doing the thing that you're doing.
Easily.
I think comedians are much underappreciated and undervalued. I hope you're on the commercial side of things, that things go from strength to strength. So good luck.
Yeah, thanks, Liam. I appreciate it. Thanks, Brendan.
Yeah, and I agree. Echo everything Liam said there. And keep putting the Springboks in these awkward positions. We quite enjoy watching these things. And thanks for joining us.
Always, man. Awesome. Have a good day. Yeah. Good luck for the year. Exciting test ahead of us. So, yeah.
Thanks,
man. Okay. Awesome. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacaranda.fm.com or the Jackpot app.